Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. Today, I'm very happy to be speaking to the Drew Struzan of the sporting artist world, Dave Merrill.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right, Dave. Thank you very much. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Very good.
Good. So can you tell us where do we find you today? Where are you based in the world?
I am in Flixton, Manchester, in the UK.
In the UK. And so yeah. I should have guessed from the accent, really. So does this mean, do you sit on the red or the blue side of Manchester, or is that a bit presumptuous?
No, I sit on the blue side, the only side.
The only side.
Controversial.
Interesting, very good to know. And so just describing to our listeners what I can see right now. So are we talking to you in your studio room?
Studio stroke bedroom, spare bedroom, yeah.
Yeah. Is that some of your work? Is that a Pelé portrait of yours in the background?
Yes. Yeah, that was the piece I did for an exhibition that got me into... doing football illustration.
Oh, really? So quite a significant piece?
Yeah, so I thought I'd put it up in the background as a talking point. So,
let's start from there, in fact, because it's great for people to learn how artists such as yourself who have the platform that you have and do the profile of work that you do, how did you start? And it's always great to find out if there was one kind of brief or piece of work that really snowballed for you.
It was it all started on Twitter. One of my old schoolmates put a picture of some of Steve Welsh's work up. Miniborough, and it was a picture of Main Road that he'd done, like an isometric picture of Main Road, and he said, "Hey, have you seen this work?" I said, yeah, it's cool. So then I said, well, I'll reply with this. I did a Balotelli at the time.
Yeah.
And it was all in the fragmental sort of style.
Yeah.
So I put that up and Steve saw it. And he was part of an exhibition called Fantasista at the time.
Yes. Yeah.
And he said, I love that Balotelli. I'll see if we can get you as part of the exhibition. Because I really love it. I think it fit in really well. So he went away, came back, said, I've got these two contacts, Rick Schwarbrick and I think it was Chris Platt.
Yep.
And they got back in touch, said, we'd really love to have you as part of the exhibition. I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So I did that, the Pelé portrait, and I did a Zidane, which is like about massive, did a massive Zidane in pencil and gouache, which is what that is. They were well happy with it, and they put them up, and they used the Pelé as the front of the program for the exhibition.
Fantastic.
And so I carried on doing that style, and then an agency called ACA, is it ACA? AQ?
AKQA. Yes.
Yeah, in China, saw it. And said, we've got this this project with Nike who we'd like to be a part of because we think your style is fitting really well.
Fantastic.
And it was like I had to draw five players each at a different interval of kicking a ball to produce a GIF. So it's like a cross, stop frame animation.
Yes, yeah.
And they loved it, and it's sort of progressed from there, really. I mean, it's not a bad first project with Nike.
No, not at all. So, what were you spending your time on before then? Was it?
I was a graphic designer at what started out as a PR agency. who had no designers there. So I was the first graphic designer there.
Yeah.
Called RMS in Altrincham. Yeah, just give them a plug. And now they are creative communications, so they've gone from like just PR to like web, digital, graphic, all that kind of thing. Yeah, so so I was the graphic designer there for about 8 years. So I learned bits and bobs of marketing and PR and bit. How to speak to clients, how not to speak to clients.
Yeah.
No, I learned a hell of a lot there about the more corporate side of things. And before that, I worked at a toy company.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah, interesting. What was your role there? Because I was going to speak to you about the stickers that we can get onto later. But can you tell us about your time at a toy company?
I started out there because I was, before that, I had my own company, which is, I'm going backwards there, wasn't I? And before that, I had my own company doing greeting cards and coming up with characters to sell on to brands.
Okay.
And that lasted four. I did that with an old school friend, and that lasted 4 years. And then we sort of decided to pack it in because we had a bad year. It snowed at all the corporate fairs they have. It snowed. Okay. Our main income was exports, so it meant people couldn't come in and we couldn't export anything. So it sort of ended the company. And from there, I went on to did a few bits and bobs, just get a bit of money in, a few bits and bobs jobs like packing in factories and things like that.
I'll pay the bills.
Yeah. And then I got a job at the toy company. I started out as a graphic designer there, doing all packaging for Postman Pat and Bob the Builder and Teletubby, Disney Princess. And got to work on things like DC and Marvel. They had some really decent licenses.
Yes.
And then I thought, well, I can do these characters. I can do all these illustrations that these style guys are producing. So I went to the bosses and said, I'm going to come up with a few ideas for brands for the in-house, if you will accept it.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, then let's see what you can come up with. And I came up with three, and they loved one of them, which was called a brand called Odd Bods. It could take head. It was like a sort of pre-made sort of Lego vehicles and characters. So like for for 0 to 3s, really.
Okay.
And I did everything. I did the character designs, the logo, the packaging design. I worked with the 3D sculptor, the 3D CAD designers to produce this brand. It won two awards, which is pretty good for first go.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Seems like you have a habit of getting things on the first go.
Yeah, it goes downhill.
Well, just touching on your character design. So,
yeah.
Looking at your portraiture work, do you feel that those early days in character design you bring into your portraiture work, and how you're able to pull out elements from a personality or traits we associate with a player into those great kind of action portraits you create?
I think it certainly helped because I was working with other product designers. And the way they drew things was completely different to how I used to draw things.
Okay.
I failed my GCSEs in art.
Oh, no, me too. I got a D. What did you do?
Yes,
I don't know about you, and without making excuses for myself, I know I was lazy and didn't do any of the prep work. Not saying that I would have passed anyway, but, you know, exactly. I need to take responsibility for that.
But I didn't really need to do any prep work. I could sit down and just draw pictures straight off.
Okay, and yeah.
It's more or less really what I do now.
Yeah.
But it helps with all the deadlines now.
Yeah.
So I just, it's sort of a case of making it up as you're going along. So yeah, if I'm put on the spot, if someone says, right, David, we've got this, what can you do? If I'm put on the spot, I sort of I draw a blank a bit. But if you give me a pencil and give me a pad and let me do a few sketches, it helps the sort of the flow of ideas for me. I can't do it all on the spot in my head. It has to come from the hand to the mind, back to the hand.
Oh no, brilliant! Well, it's finding out about technically how you work was going to be great today. So, do you work very much with wet material still, as well as digitally? Well, sorry, wet and dry traditional media, as well as digitally.
The only time I have a pencil and a pad in front of me is when I'm doing thumbnails for ideas.
Oh, okay. Really. Yeah.
And then they just take a picture of them with my phone and put it in Photoshop and then use that as the basis of what I'm going to design.
Okay.
And purely digital now, yeah.
And you work predominantly in Photoshop?
Photoshop, and then if there's any accuracy that needs to, real accuracy, I go to Illustrator and build it up in there and then take it back into Photoshop and distort it and use that as reference for the sketch that I'm going to do. So I use everything really. I'd like to learn how to use Maya or ZBrush or one of these 3D packages just for if you can roughly sculpt someone's face and then move it and then put lighting on it, it sort of gives you a bit more reference to use rather than trolling through Alamy or Getty just to get the right lighting.
Yeah, absolutely. And more control over the work as well and getting your greater depth of knowledge to whatever the subject is that you're drawing as well, rather than just working from a 2D image.
Yeah, understanding what you're drawing is vital. The volume, the mass, the texture, where the light's coming from, that is crucial to getting the person looking at your art to believe what you're actually trying to get across. That's vital.
Well, also with your work, because you've got such an amazing ability to create compositions, every piece of work I see of yours just makes me think of an action movie poster. There's as well as what looks like movement and action happening visually, you have so many elements coming in. And so the lighting considerations and even the layers of textures, there's so much complexity. I mean, in my eyes anyway, to your work.
Yeah, I mean, that all comes down to experience and experimenting. Because, I mean, like I said, there are lots and lots of layers to my files. I mean, you're talking like 250 layers.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, and a lot of that is textures. I mean, I to get some of the effects that I get, I just I get a piece of paper. But actually, I do use wet stuff. I create loads of different marks on a piece of paper.
Right.
Loads, and then scan it in.
Yeah,
and then get rid of the white and just have the black, and then use those as textures over the top of each other, and then put layer masks on them and get rid of bits of them, blur something here, smudge something there.
Wow! So literally every texture is fresh and new.
Not every. Sometimes I reuse them if they're decent. I mean, there's a lot that I haven't used, but there's favourites that I use in most of them.
Wow, yeah, fantastic! So, just to know that wee bit of knowledge to how Dave Merrill works—that's fantastic.
Yeah, I've used a lot of them in the last season's Bundesliga illustrations. No, yes. The really minimalist ones, the black and white ones.
Yes.
Most of that illustration is made up of textures that I've drawn on downstairs on the table with paint and gouache and just splatted things on the paper and just rubber fist through things. Then you scan it in and then you make up an image solely based on.
And does that make you feel almost ever more satisfied with the work? Because there's that extra layer of kind of self-creation, I guess, that...
I enjoy doing it because of that fact. Yeah, I don't necessarily think it gives me more satisfaction, but I like it because it's like a progression of the style that I've got.
Okay, yeah.
Because then I've tried that out, it works, so then I can introduce it into my main style.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. So
got loads of different aspects that I experiment with that I then bring into the style which I've got. So it's all about experimentation, really.
Well, I guess actually we should just, let's go back one step, and can you let people know where they can see your work first off?
My website, that's got mainly everything on it, which is www.davemerrill.com. My Twitter is just @DaveMerrill. My Instagram is @DaveMerrillArtwork, and Facebook is DaveMerrillArtwork as well. So it's either Dave Merrill or Dave Merrill Artwork.
Straightforward to find.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Yeah. And how conscious are you with using social media channels to showcase your work? We've spoken to others on the show about the importance to make sure your work is seen, and we even learned earlier about how your work was, your very early work was found, and then the profile of brief that got you. So kind of how important do you find your managing of social channels?
Well, I owe a lot to social channels. Otherwise, I don't think the work would be half as popular as it is. I owe a lot to the clients that do give me the projects to work on them. Some of them let me show the work, some of them don't. So there's a lot of work out there of mine that I can't showcase. But you can find them on various channels. That's just contractual stuff. But I personally, I'm a bit rubbish on social media.
Oh, really?
I think so? Yeah, I mean, all I do is just post my work. Really, I should be bigging up other people as well and, you know, commenting on other people's work. But it's tough because I'm juggling so many things that social media sort of takes a back seat.
Well, I do think whatever works for you, you know, I mean, I've always found that there's always new work of yours to see online. So I'd say in that sense, I'm always happy to see new activity from Dave Merrill, always. And do you find any particular channel has worked best for you?
That's a funny one because Instagram used to be brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's sporadic now. You can put something on and it'll get 1,000 likes, and then you can put something on that's just as good in the next couple of weeks and it'll get like 100.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the algorithms are in Instagram, but they seem to be all over the place at the moment. So Twitter's good at the moment for that sort of thing.
I'll tell you what I have found myself as late, and I do like to let others know, is that LinkedIn has become more of a genuine useful tool.
Yes, yeah, LinkedIn definitely.
Creatives. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I met up with, I met Stan Chow at an exhibition that I did with Dave Flanagan and Phil Galloway were there.
Yeah,
and he said with LinkedIn, he said it's all right with all these others, Instagram and Twitter, getting your followers and all that, but LinkedIn is good for, do you want a job?
Absolutely.
Put your work out there and people to see it to give you a job.
Yeah.
Because you don't know who sees what, where, do you, who gets in touch with you to give you a project. Unless you ask, I always forget.
Yeah, no, I'm not always the best for asking myself, but it's that balance, like it's that choice between, do you find value yourself in getting lots of likes on social channels, which makes you feel good about popularity of your work, or do you want to get your work seen by art directors and design directors who, you know, do you, I mean, I personally find more value in having my work seen by five potential art directors rather than thousands of people who think it looks good in a square format on a social channel, you know?
Yeah, well, I'd like to have both.
Well, yeah. Why can't you have both? You're right.
I want my cake, I'll eat it. But I think it's more important to get the jobs coming in, otherwise you wouldn't exist. Yeah. They're what pay our wages, but it's always good to get the adulation, isn't it, of other people. I mean, it does perk you up.
Yeah, you can't deny that, absolutely. But then it's you do then need to either have a word with yourself or understand that hey, if you don't feel that something is getting the numbers that you thought it would get, don't worry about it. You know,
exactly.
Because it's purely down to an algorithm as well about who sees things, you know.
Even if it's not down to an algorithm, though, don't stress.
Just
do some more work.
Yeah.
If people don't like it, they don't like it. If you like it, you wouldn't have put it out. You know what I mean?
And if you like it, that's all that essentially matters. As long as you're producing work that you like, then...
If you've learned something from it, then it's served its purpose for me.
Top man, exactly. Well, can you just talk us through what's a typical working week for Dave Merrill? I'm sure it changes every single week. But do you tend to
all
work
over the place?
I mean, I know we're in a pandemic at the moment, but do you tend to work from home yourself?
Do I work from home? Yes,
yeah.
I'm working here. It's like a prison cell at times.
Yeah,
because I tend not to leave very much, only to get a cup of tea. But when I get a briefing, is that what you want?
Yeah.
Well, it depends who's giving the brief, really. You have all kinds of different brief givers. You have people that give you a brief that are so specific that all you've got to do, really, is find the reference for it.
Yeah.
And then put it on the page and then send a sketch over. And then you have others that are really like, well, we've got these teams playing in next week. Can you come up with something?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And I'd say I produce the better work when it's solely left up to me.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. Personally, anyway, when it's an open brief, I mean, not too open that I'm sort of scraping ideas together to try and get something over that I hope they'll like. I mean, I need a brief that sort of, it's sort of streamlined into, I know exactly what you're thinking, I know exactly what you want. But I mean, with that comes from speaking with the client. I mean, you've got to ask the right questions to get the answers that you need, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when the briefs come in to me that are maybe, like the briefs themselves are more prescriptive and maybe a bit more heavily art directed, for me, I think of it as it's almost a bit more of an artwork challenge than the more open conceptual briefs that I get. And so I like that balance for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the conceptual briefs are, I think, getting the concept is the hardest bit. Getting them to agree on the concept as well is the hardest bit, because you have to give rationales and reasons why you've done this and why you've done that. But I think it's the most satisfying when they agree.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And in your portfolio, you've got some examples of designing for real large scale. There's the Pelé World Soccer mural in New York, which was an enormous scale.
And that was then, huge.
And then you produce work, a lot of work for social content for the Bundesliga, and other organisations. So can you, like, what's the challenge between working on a large scale and then working for a smaller format for social?
Well, the dimensions play a big part. I don't know, how big was the Pelé thing? I think it was like 8 meters, 12 meters long, something like that.
Okay.
And then the dimensions, and then you got to think of the concept. The concept was big for the Pelé one because it was, everything was centered around him, and they wanted it because it was in Times Square. It's uh-huh. like, it's from the view of, you know, when you're looking at the central column in Times Square and all the lights are coming out. That's the concept that I used. So it's him in the middle with the lights, and then it's like you're looking down that Times Square with all the lights coming out, and then you've got all billboards of him.
Yeah.
Certain parts of his career.
So you've based the composition on the format that you're working with as such, and making sure that the format is used as best as it can and can help the composition work really hard.
Definitely, as like the BT one, which was the return of the Champions League, where you had Van Dijk guarding the trophy. He had all the other players curved round. That worked really well for a square format.
And just to say, really, both of these pieces of work are available on davemerrill.com. So please jump on there and have a look while you're listening to this, just to let people know what they can look at while they're listening to this. Do you really have a preference between working on a big or a larger scale, or for you is it, well, it's the brief, it doesn't, the kind of format doesn't consider so.
Yeah, brief's a brief to me, really. It doesn't matter. It's just the challenge that the brief brings. It's all done on the Wacom, so it's not like I'm painting 3 meters, size characters. And it's all done on a screen, so it's of no real significance, the size difference now. Just time, I think.
Yeah.
The time it takes to do it.
Why football work? Why that Pelé portrait that then got seen and then got you the Nike brief? Like, why do football portraits? Just a love of the sport, and it developed from there.
Well, I have three main loves in life, apart from obviously my family and my daughter and my wife. I've got the sport. There's movies and there's computer games. Typical lad.
It's very evident how those three combine in your work. I mean, outside of it's why I introduced you as the Drew Struzan of the football artist world, because there's a real kind of epicness to all of the work. I mean, talking from someone that isn't yourself, I see a real epic element in all of the work that you do. It makes me think of movie posters from the 70s and the 80s, and like, were they an inspiration for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Drew, like you said, Drew Struzan is one of the main people that I've sort of taken my technique from my work, and the way he gets the emotion of what he's trying to draw across. The way his posters make you feel are what make his work so good. Uh-huh. It's not, I mean, he's brilliant, his technique wise, absolutely brilliant, but it's the way his posters make you feel that's what makes his work so different from the other poster artists out there. And that's really what I want to try and capture with my work. There's people like Alex Ross, who's a comic book artist as well.
Yes.
And I've taken things from his technique as well. He's sort of like nicking other people's, the way they work, or learning off them, not nicking it, but learning off them.
And then adapting it for your own.
And adapting it for your own style. I mean, Alex Ross, his concepts, his compositions, if you look at the way he's, the way he composes his images, you'll see a significance to my work as well, because I've taken some of his ideas and put them into mine. But I mean, he's done that with other artists from the past, like Jack Kirby, who was a poster, a comic artist.
Yes.
But he's redone them in his style. And I think that's just the way it goes through history, I think. You know, people take things from other people and put them into a blend of their own mix and then produce something from them. But it's all about taking the right things from the right people, I think.
Yeah. And then doing them in the right way, I guess.
And doing them in the right way, yeah. And once you get that cocktail right, you're drunk on your own art.
Can you let the audience know about your non-football work? So just looking at your website, there's the Reflections series based on movie characters, and then the reflective scenes, and they're great. Well, I'll let you talk it through, but it'd be great to know about the non-football work that you do.
Yeah, because I was doing so much sport, and like I said, I've got love for movies and computer games. I thought I'd try the alternative movie poster game is massive at the minute. It has been for a few years. So I thought, I'd love to try something along, you know, those lines.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough for a guy to get in contact with me from Phoenix, who commissions quite a few of my pieces. And he said, he's seen my sports work and said, have you ever thought of doing alternative movie posters? I thought, brilliant, this is the gateway. And he said, I've seen your sports work and I'd love to commission you for a major league one, which is a baseball film in the 80s. I said, brilliant. Yeah. So I did a sketch of an idea, sent it over, and he loved it. And then said, right, go ahead. So I did it. And yeah, it sold out.
Fantastic.
First go again.
Yeah. You've got a gift for that.
And even one of the actors, his son, Tom Berenger's son, got in contact with me.
He said, really? Hey,
that's my dad. I said, that's amazing. So I sent him a poster. And
yeah.
I sent him two and got his dad to sign one. And for him to keep one for saying thank you. And I've got a poster, Major League poster signed by Tom Berenger. Like 2 days. Love the work. Brilliant.
Fantastic. Yeah. And do you find it's just for yourself, it's important to be doing non kind of sporting and football work just to help your brain not feel like it's doing such repetitive work, or just to be testing yourself and your skills and just to be keeping you, I guess, wide open as an artist?
I don't want to be pigeonholed as a sports illustrator. I think that was the main thing.
Oh, yeah.
I market myself as a commercial illustrator doing sports and the entertainment industry, which is really the realm that I want to cover. But, yeah, it stops you getting bored of doing the same old thing. Lets me exercise new experiments with the sort of brush strokes and the way a way of working. I've just done some posters for a horror documentary, which I've approached it differently to how I normally would.
Okay.
And, it's worked quite well. You can be the judge of that yourself, whoever sees it, but that'll be coming out either this month or next month. So, yeah, they'll be on social media. But I've approached them differently to how I normally would. Yeah. But, I mean, they look kind of similar to my normal style, but it's just my approach to it.
Okay.
But I enjoy it more.
Well, you're talking about your love of sport, movies and computer games. If you look at your portfolio, you've done work in all of those fields. There's the wargaming World of Tanks featuring Buffon. So I guess you're like, it's a great example to show that your interests can then fuel the work that you do. And that only results in the work that has the unique voice that yours has. You know, you can see your love of those subjects in the work itself.
I think that helps. It definitely helps. If you enjoy what you're drawing, it's going to come through in your art. I mean, if you have a bitterness towards what you're drawing, you tend to rush it and try and get it out of the way as quick as possible. So it's not got the value that you want to put into it.
Yeah.
I don't rush pictures because I don't like doing them. I mean, I always produce the best I can do. But if you've got from past experience, if you've got a grudge or a bitterness, you're not going to produce the work that you want to.
Yeah. Or if it's the kind of thing that you're dialing in because it's the same thing that I did last week, but just with a slight different variant, you know?
Yeah.
And it also helps you direct your portfolio. So your portfolio isn't only directed and filled by client work that's coming in. If you're directing that as well, it's the old fix that potential clients see work that you've done and they want their version of it. So if you're directing your portfolio, you've got that control over where your work ends up going.
Yeah, the stuff that I've done for my personal self, like the Aguero I did ages ago, and the Van Persie from the back.
Yes.
The amount of people the clients that came to me and said, "We love this. Can you reproduce this, but like this?"
Yeah.
So it's, and the head of the game ones where the, just the heads like Yaya Toure and Neymar.
Yes.
And, I mean, if I hadn't done those in my spare time, I wouldn't have got the snowball effect with the work, I don't think. So you've just got to keep yourself busy creating all the time, I think. If you stop, it's like it's the Rolling Stone gathers no moss saying, isn't it?
Exactly.
You've got to keep moving and moving, and not become stagnant in your own approach.
And talking about your own approach and your own personal projects, can you talk us through Kiddos?
Kiddos is a new thing. It's still in its, it's like a teething period at the moment. I just want to get awareness out there.
Yeah,
it's just little cutesy, sort of based on a generic figure that you can turn into any character that you want. So it can work for football, it can work for films, it can work for computer games. There we go, the Holy Trinity. it can work for anything, but I just wanted to try it out because I entered a it was a competition years ago that I entered with the Top Gun ones. It's like produced a Top Gun t-shirt, and I thought, oh, I'll do a little figure, little character, cutesy kiddie character. And I thought, so I did the Maverick one, and I thought, they'll actually work if you go right the way through. So I did all four. And I thought, well, you could take it through to other films as well. So then it just sort of progressed onto that. And I thought, why don't I just do something with it? Because it's been sitting in a file for about 4 years, not doing anything. So I thought, oh, I'll come up with a name. I'll come up with a logo. I'll just get it out there. And I mean, the stick is the first thing that I thought I could get them out there, but it's not proven to be that way. So I might just release them as, I don't know what to do with them really.
I mean, like in the same way that you'd started them back then, and then picked them up later on, you might find that one day, maybe in a couple of weeks or a couple of months down the line, you wake up with this light bulb effect of,
I mean, there's outsources out there. I mean, I was putting them on this website called Sticker App, who produce stickers for, you know, you can put your file on there and people can order them off there. And it's sort of, they take all the hassle away from you producing the stickers, mailing them off, and I can't deal with all that. I just want to produce the work and just let somebody else handle that. But there's other outsources, like there's a website called Threadless that you can put them on phone cases and t-shirts and jumpers, and I think they're going that route, but I don't know. I just think if I build up a library of them first, you know, a vast library, because I've got loads of ideas. I just go to sleep at night thinking, oh, that'd be good.
Yeah,
that'd be good, isn't it? Because I'm just sketched out a Stranger Things, you know, all the kids from Stranger Things.
Ah, yes, yeah.
You know, yeah, I've done that one. Because what I've not done is not sort of honed in on the market that it's aimed at yet.
Yeah.
Like, who are they for? I mean, I get gratification from doing it because it's just like, you know, when you've got a spare hour or two, you can just reel off another couple. But it's who's liking them? Who's that's what I really want to try. It's like a focus group sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the stick thing was sort something to just add on to it. But if anybody wanted the stickers, they can go and order them. If not, don't. But it's just more of a recreational thing for me at the moment to try and figure out where it's going.
And then we'll see just where it goes from there. So you're letting the work happen first, and then the universe will connect some dots for however it works later on. Yeah.
You don't know. A branding licensing agency might see it and don't think, oh, they might look, you know, like Paul Frank stuff and things like that. I mean, they could see it on things like that, stationery and, you know, bags for girls, or, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Just see where it goes. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So are you much of a footballer yourself? Do you still play at all? Or did you ever?
I've not played for about 15 years. I've just been working.
That's your Solidly. Playing now.
I'd like to play. I think the last time I played, I pulled both my thigh
muscles. Tough.
Yeah, at the same time, so I couldn't run. And that was in the first 5 minutes. So that I've not played since then. But I'd love to play again. Yeah. Used to play five-a-side, six-a-side, 3 days.
What kind of player were you? How would you describe yourself?
Well, when I was younger, they put me in defence because I was big, tall, and I had I could whack the ball far. And just stick him in defence.
Yeah.
Because I was fast as well. I'm a fast runner.
Oh, okay.
I don't look it, but I am. And they said, well, just stick him in defence. I did well in defence. And then in the later years, late teens, early 20s, I was up front.
Oh, really? Yeah.
They just knocked the ball over and a dart past the defence. It was like route one.
Like a reverse Dion Dublin. Starting as a striker, then finishing as a centre back.
But I had a hard shot. But when I was playing for the five-a-side and the six-a-side, then that taught me how, because there's no point being able to run quick in five and six-a-side. It's the short burst, isn't it? And the one-twos.
Yeah. Make the ball work for you.
I think I learned that side of the game better than I did at the 11-a-side. You know, holding the ball up, being composed, seeing who's available, one-twos, dragging people off. You know, the strategy to the game.
Yeah, yeah.
I learned that a lot more playing five and six-a-side. So I'm now a complete player.
That's really good.
I'm open to hire.
And I'm asking everyone this question. Favourite football kit and favourite boots?
Boots? That would have to be... This is from a personal perspective.
Yeah,
because I've probably scored a goal with them. Puma King.
Nice. Okay, I've been waiting for someone to say Puma King, yeah.
Have you? Because I didn't have much money when I was playing football. And I thought, well, I'll save up for a really decent pair.
Yeah.
So I bought a pair of Puma King and they were amazing. You were just comfort on your feet. And I think they were the boots I scored most goals with.
Why
Five, six aside.
Why choose Puma King? Was there a player wearing them at the time, or you just liked
them? No, I don't know why. It's a classically
designed boot.
It is a classic design boot, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't know. I knew of them. I knew they were good.
And yeah.
Really, I think that's all I need to know.
Well, yeah, there you go.
If they're well made and they're a good boot, and they proved it when I wore them.
Yeah.
And they were just simple, weren't they? A bit like me, just simple. But they're black with the white Puma stripe down it.
Yeah.
And then just like the textbook stud formation on the bottom.
Yeah. And the wee touch of gold in the
on the king bit.
Yes.
It's a king, yeah.
Was there a bit on the tongue as well, just like a little accent?
Yes,
on the...
yes, there was. There was on the, yeah.
I never had a pair, but I can visually always really recall Puma Kings.
Mm. Yeah. They were the days.
And what about Kit?
Kit. See, I'm torn between two. My first one that came to mind was the German Italian 91.
Yes.
With that thing.
Yeah.
That beautiful kit, I thought. So just iconic. Straight away, just iconic.
There's so much about Italian 90 for me everything, yeah.
Yeah, that there's no World Cup that's been since that's matched it, I don't think.
Yeah.
Like all the graphics were new on it, weren't they?
Yes.
Like the time scores and the music, the atmosphere,
Do you remember the dots? They had a line of dots kind of around the score or between the scores. I just remember that. And when the teams came up, there was just very simple kind of dotted lines that just framed the scores and the match info.
Yeah.
All of that.
I think that was the sort of turning point as for the sort of graphics that they have nowadays.
Yes.
Like with the time and the extra time and how it was all placed on the screen for you to see. It had never been done like that before. And even the events that happened during the World Cup, like the spitting of the Rijkaard spitting on Rudy Voller. What else was there? Just the penalties, the Gazza, what a player.
Yes, and Cameroon.
The Cameroon Roger Miller, yeah.
Yes, and Rene Higuita's, you remember Rene Higuita being robbed of the ball? Do you remember Colombia, it was against Cameroon, was it not, that Rene Higuita was playing with the ball way out of his box, lost it, and then, so like the ultimate kind of Rene Higuita howler happened in that World Cup. And
he did the scorpion kick in that World Cup, didn't he? Was it?
I always remember the old Wembley against England. He may have done, but the scorpion kick I remember him was against Jamie Redknapp from a long distance shot at the old Wembley.
Maybe that's the one then. Maybe I'm getting mixed up. But Valderrama as well. He was a player. Yes.
Yeah.
And who else? Who was the guy who... I can't remember if it was Italian 90, but he got the ball between his feet and he jumped with the ball over.
I remember there was a Mexican guy, Blanco.
Blanco, that's it.
I remember him from the 98 World Cup.
Right, that's when it'll be.
Yeah, because I remember he was right on the touchline with a defender and he did that exact same thing you're describing and just did it over the defender's legs and just carried on.
Sort of thing you do it in a school playground with a tennis ball.
Yeah, absolutely.
We did it in the World Cup. Good on him.
Yeah. And look,
the German... on the kits, there's the old England Admiral kit is the one that I like the most, I think, with the blue here and then the red.
Yeah.
Because
for those that are listening without the video, that's on the shoulders and across the chest. Just a bit of audio description for you there. But you say England Admiral, and that's the one that stands out. I always think of Ray Wilkins.
Kevin Keegan.
Yes.
Who else?
Brian Robson injured.
I was young, 82, wasn't it?
Yes.
82,
all those years ago. The year I was born.
Was it?
It was, yeah, 82. Oh, big year.
You're 37.
Just turned 38 last month.
38. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much. 38 years young.
Yeah, I'm a little bit older than you.
Well, going from the past to the future, looking ahead, is there? Tell us about a dream brief. What would be a when you're kicking back in your retirement and thinking, "Oh, so happy I got to do that." But something that hasn't happened yet. What comes to mind? If anything from putting you on the spot?
No, I have never had a project to do with the World Cup.
Okay. Yeah.
Whether it's men or whether it's women's, I've never had a project to do with the World Cup. And I've not worked with FIFA either. Never worked with FIFA. So, anything to do with the World Cup would be great.
Yeah.
I've got something with the UEFA. Should be happening next year.
Oh, okay.
But I can't really talk about that due to contractual reasons.
Yes.
But UEFA are brilliant to work with.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, I'd like to work with FIFA as well. So I hope they're good to work with. But a World Cup, anything to do with the World Cup, really. Yeah.
Do you enjoy international football? Like, do you kind of engage with it as much as club football, or is it
not with the friendlies?
Yeah,
I don't see the point of the friendlies. The World Cups, especially, yeah, because I get involved in that. I get all the stickers and the sticker books and it just gives it a bit more of an edge. And even the Euros, yeah, the Euros, any competition based thing really.
It gives, okay.
You know, when you've got something to play for. And something to get behind your team. I mean, when England go out, inevitably go out, it sort of becomes less interesting. But when England are in it, yeah, it's any competition-based thing with England in it, I'll watch it, yeah, and get a bit passionate about it.
Now, happy days. And how are you feeling about this coming season?
What, with City?
Yeah, for your boys.
Yeah, but hopeful. I'm always hopeful now. Well, now we've got Pep. Since we've had Pep and the team that we've got, I mean, we've not made that many significant signings as yet. But he needs to start renewing. I mean, some of them are getting old now, aren't they? I mean, Silva's just gone.
Yes.
And we've got Foden, hopefully, to replace him. And who else he just bought? He just bought Ake, hasn't he, from Bournemouth?
Yes, a Spanish winger as well.
Torin, is it?
Torin. He bought him from Valencia.
Yeah. I mean, we do need to sort our defence out, definitely. That's our weak spot by far. Having Laporte out most of the season last season was, you know, it showed.
Yeah.
We struggled and we haven't got anybody to partner him properly, really. I mean, Stones had a half a decent season. Otamendi's, he can have the odd good game. He's sporadic. But we've got no one who can partner Laporte to his quality, I don't think, or works well with him. So I think we need to find someone like that. Whether Ake's the guy, I don't know.
They need their own Dave Merrill at the back. Do you not think so?
Dave Merrill when he was 10.
Yeah. What do you think of this year's City third kit? The Puma shirt with Paisley the...
Paisley. I won't buy one, but it's going to appeal to some people. It looks like a teacher's tie pattern, you know, like...
Yeah. It makes me think of, I mean, I like it. I like what Puma are doing at the moment. It does make me think of...
I love the Puma kits that they do. I think they're brilliant. Just that it's a third kit. I mean, if it works, it might work well on FIFA. You know, the computer game, FIFA.
Ah, yes. It did make me think of Pretty Green, though. You know, Liam Gallagher's clothing. Because when I first saw it, I thought, oh, is that any kind of... wee collaboration, but I don't think so.
Well, they've got into liquidation, haven't they? Pretty Green.
Oh, have they?
Oh, I thought they.
There we go. I didn't know that.
I don't know whether it's sort of a lifeline for them. I don't know. Collaborated with City to bring him back, but I thought they got into liquidation. Maybe they've not. I don't know. Just what I read.
A bit of a bit of research for me to do after this.
Like I said, I could be wrong, I don't know. It's just what I heard.
Brilliant. Well, Dave, it's been fantastic speaking to you today. Can you just remind everyone where they can find you online, please?
Yeah, you can find me on my website, which is www.davemerrill.com. You can find me on Instagram, which is at Dave Merrill Artwork. You can find me on Twitter, which is at Dave Merrill, or Facebook, which is Dave Merrill Artwork. Just type that in the search field and you'll find me. Just get in touch if you want to, if you have any jobs.
Fantastic. And let's, I don't know about everyone else, but I'm sat on the edge of this seat waiting to see what you've got coming up with UEFA next year. So thank you for the teaser.
Yeah, well, it's all right. I'm sorry I can't show you anything, but...
No, don't be that. That makes it ever more exciting, and I'm glad you can't. It makes it's the build-up.
Well, it was supposed to be this year, but it's next year. There's a clue, but that's all I can say.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, yeah. Take from that what you will.
Yeah.
Right, Dave, again, it's been fantastic speaking to you today. What's the rest of the day got involved for you?
I am doing a movie poster commission for Die Hard.
Ah.
Yeah, so I've just had the concept approved, so I'm going to start fleshing it all out now. So, that'll keep me busy for today, I think.
Fantastic.
Picking up a little in later on.
Good man. Right, well, Dave, enjoy your day, and thanks again.
No worries. Thank you.
Thanks for good man.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.